Let's get down to business, taking a look at Wall Street. Dow Jones Industrial Average up 11? Seriously, at 20,821. It's a record high close for the Dow Jones Industrial Average. Wow, where did that come from? Whenever the Dow Jones Industrial Average hits a record high close, we have a celebration here at the Money Radio Megaplex in beautiful uptown Scottsdale. Money Radio staff gathers in the control room. The Money Radio Symphonic Orchestra plays the celebratory theme. Money Radio staff gathers in the control room. That's your cue, gang. Once again, I repeat, where is everybody? Seriously, there's Wes and Renee and James, of course. Where's everybody else? Where's the sales staff? You're right, that is silly. Friday afternoon, they've been gone since lunch. Okay, anybody else around here? Hello out there. Hello. Yeah, well, I know, nobody expected it. I get it. I did not expect it. No, there are no fresh cookies. If you look in the cabinet, you'll find an extra box of the Girl Scout cookies. Doreen left them just because she knew, apparently. Yeah, well, just go on down. Celebrate with milk and cookies. Got to tell you, the folks around here putting on some weight, some serious weight. Dow Jones Industrial Average up 11 at a record setting, 20,821. S&P 500 up 3 at 2,367. NASDAQ Composite up 9 at 5,845. Russell 2000 small and mid caps off a fraction at 1394. Yield on the 10-year Treasury note down 7 basis points at 2.32%. Oil down 42 cents at $54.03 per barrel, and gold up $7.60 at $12.57.90 per ounce. 11 days of record-breaking closes. The best streak of positive sessions since 1993. The longest streak of record-breaking sessions is 14 in a row. That goes back to 1897. Three to go to tie. For most of the day, the major indices were in negative territory. Dow futures dropped more than 100 points early in the morning, and then in the final 17 seconds of trading the day, buyers just jumped in again. It was like panic buying. Dow Industrial Average is up more than 1,000 points since the start of the year, almost 3,000 points since the election. This was the third up week in a row for the Dow, the fifth straight positive week for the S&P and NASDAQ. 10-year Treasury note had its best week since last June. Gold is up 8 of the last 9 weeks and is at its highest level since October. In economic news, U.S. new home sales rose 3.7% in January, below the expected increase of 6.3%. Meanwhile, consumer sentiment in the U.S. hit 96.3 in February, slightly above an estimate of 96. Earnings season, which is coming to an end, has been much stronger than anticipated. According to Thomson Reuters, fourth quarter earnings growth is tracking about 7.5%. It seems U.S. equity funds are where the world is parking its money for the time being, with over $25 billion coming into market coffers since January 1st. President Trump spoke before the Conservative Political Action Committee today, and he ramped up his attack against the news media, charging that fake news outlets are the enemy of the people. And later in the day, the White House fired a shot across the bow, blocking CNN, The New York Times, The Los Angeles Times, Politico, and BuzzFeed News from an off-camera White House press briefing conducted by White House Press Secretary Sean Spicer. The Associated Press and Time magazine boycotted the briefing because of how it was handled. The White House Correspondents Association also protested the move. Spicer only allowed in reporters from a hand-picked group of news organizations that the White House said had been previously confirmed. The press session, known as a gaggle, was scheduled as a no-camera event, less formal than usual briefings that are carried live on cable news. But past administrations have not hand-selected outlets that can attend such sessions. Two of the barred outlets, CNN and The Times, have been a particular focus of Trump's ire, and during the presidential campaign, some journalists from BuzzFeed News and Politico were prohibited from attending Trump rallies. Representatives of the barred news organizations made clear that they believe the White House's actions were punitive. Oil investors have placed the biggest bet in history that prices will rise. Fund managers now hold more Brent oil futures and options contracts than at any time on record, equivalent to some 480 million barrels of oil, nearly double the amount held just 2 months ago. The Brent April contract now commands a premium of $1.50 over the December 2018, a condition known as backwardation. Crude inventories held in the world's richest nations are still high, but they've begun to drain, and traders expect demand for oil to improve to the point where it overtakes supply. Meanwhile, industry executives, analysts, and investors sizing up Saudi Aramco say it may be worth nowhere near the $2 trillion that's been touted. For example, Wood Mackenzie came up with a rough valuation of Aramco's core business of $400 billion. While that is significantly more than ExxonMobil with a market cap just under $340 billion, it is not enough to provide the capital the Saudis require to run the national budget. That's just a guess at valuation, of course, because Saudi Aramco has never revealed financial statements. For the Saudis, though, the writing is on the wall. Demand for oil will peak in the next 10 to 12 years, according to Royal Dutch Shell projections, as alternative fuels and electric cars gain popularity, putting Middle East energy producers on shakier footing. Saudi Aramco valuations are premised on a simple calculation. Take the 261 billion barrels of reserves Saudi Arabia says lie under oil fields and multiply by $8. That's a benchmark used to value reserves. By that logic, though, Russian producer Rosneft's market capitalization would be $272 billion instead of $64 billion, and the value of ExxonMobil would be 53% smaller than it is. Another factor for valuation, those reserves might not be all that they're cracked up to be. Consider that ExxonMobil just lost 4.3 billion barrels of reserves this week. Not lost, really, just removed from their books. The reserves are still under the ground and controlled by ExxonMobil, but for accounting purposes, they no longer meet the SEC's criteria for being economic to produce anytime soon, chiefly because oil prices have collapsed. Higher prices could push those reserves back onto the books, but lower demand could keep prices much lower for much longer. ExxonMobil CEO Darren Woods, he's the guy who replaced Rex Tillerson, Woods is calling for a nationwide carbon tax to discourage use of polluting fuels. In a blog post, Woods writes, "It would promote greater energy efficiency and the use of today's lower carbon options, avoid further burdening the economy, and also provide incentives for markets to develop additional low-carbon energy solutions for the future." In a memo signed February 21st, but published late yesterday, U.S. Attorney General Jeff Sessions rescinded a six-month-old order that was to phase out the use of private prisons by the federal government. CoreCivic and Geo Group, two of the largest for-profit prison operators, both rose. The companies have more than recovered the steep losses their shares suffered after the former administration's September directive. JCPenney will shutter two distribution centers and 130 to 140 stores. The closures announced today represent 13 to 14% of the company's store portfolio, less than 5% of total annual sales, and 0% of net income. The company is starting an early retirement program for about 6,000 eligible associates. Chief Executive Marvin Ellison said closing stores will allow Penny to adjust its business to effectively compete against the growing threat of online retailers. Department store operators Kohl's and Macy's are betting on a potential money spinner. They're carving out prime space within their sprawling stores and leasing them to other retailers. The move underscores the pressing need for the two chains to better monetize their real estate assets at a time when fewer people are visiting malls. Meanwhile, retailers have been lobbying against a border tax proposal that would increase the tax bite on any company that imports goods into the U.S. Retailers would be among the biggest losers if such a proposal were implemented in full, as the majority of their sales are of imported goods. Retailers and other critics say the planned 20% tax on imports could be passed along in the form of higher prices to consumers, including manufacturers who rely on imported goods to make their products. Some critics have warned of a potential global trade war, which would sharply curtail U.S. and world economic growth. Advocates say U.S. exporters will gain as their revenues will be excluded from federal taxes. They say the tax on imports will encourage domestic production and cause the already strong dollar to rise, offsetting upward pressure on import prices. Yesterday, Trump spoke positively about a border tax. Today, Gary Cohn, the president's chief economic advisor, told a group of executives at a private event in Washington that the White House does not support this initiative. If the administration can't find unanimity in a tax plan, imagine what happens when an actual plan is subjected to public scrutiny. Google and Uber started off as friends, then they became competitors, and they are now adversaries in a bitter legal fight to control the future of transportation. Waymo, the Google self-driving car group, has accused Uber of using stolen technology to advance its own autonomous car development. Google filed a lawsuit claiming that a team of ex-Google engineers stole the company's design for the LiDAR laser sensor that allows self-driving cars to map the environment around them. Dow Industrial Average today up 11 to close at a record 20,821. S&P 500 up 3 at 2367. NASDAQ Composite up 9 at 5845. As always, we invite you to follow along at moneyradio.com, live streaming and archived audio. The daily blog is eatthebankers.com. That's eatthebankers.com.